This is an ABC podcast. This is the WA Country Hour with Belinda Varischetti on ABC Radio WA.
Very good afternoon to you. It's Friday. I hope your Friday is going well so far. Good to have you along. And some good news. After 12:30 today, the wool market is back up this week. We'll go through the market details for you just before the news at 1:00. We'll also see if there's some rain on the way. I know, fingers crossed in a lot of areas that there's some rain on the way just to help those grain crops along a little bit. So we'll cross to the Bureau of Meteorology, as we always do, just after 12:30 today. And shortly, just a quick sort of whip around some parts of the agricultural region just to check on those crops, see how they're doing. Harvest has started, as we spoke about earlier in the week, in the northern ag zone, sort of in that Geraldton zone. It's kicked off. And we'll call in there, but also have a look around other parts of the grain growing region too, just to check on those crops. And we'll sort of start with a grain theme really today, because the monthly USDA World Agricultural Supply and Demand Estimates, known as the WASDE report, was dropped last night. And it's always closely watched by the grains industry because of the impact that it can have on global prices. So just to break down the numbers a little bit for us, this is Angus Thornton, and he's from the AgriData and Information Services company ProFarmer. Angus, what are the key points, the highlights really in this report that really jumped out at you?
Hi, Belinda. Thanks for having me. So in terms of the key numbers which did or perhaps did not come out of this report, the market was looking for a bit of a reduction in US corn production and end stocks. However, although the world end stocks were down for corn, US production stayed on even pegging, with an increase in yield and a decline in harvested area. And probably the other key thing to come out of it was that world wheat end stocks came in at a very marginal month-on-month increase. And probably one of the key messages out of that was that US exports were taken down month-on-month, with the reduced competitiveness of US wheat and export markets cited as the reason for that. So following the release of this report, Chicago markets took a very much a bearish turn, with corn leading the way, but still the December Chicago December wheat futures was still $5.50 lower overnight to finish the session at $268 Australian dollars a ton.
So how significant is that CBOT wheat price drop?
So in terms of how significant it is, I mean, so that's roughly a couple of percent. I mean, in the coming days, it'll be interesting to see if the market finds support there and rebounds a bit, or whether it sort of looks to move sideways. I mean, over the past month, Chicago has done reasonably well in terms of, it was sort of sitting in just below 230 at the start of September. But, you know, with the aid of the currency going down, albeit it's sort of come up to that nearing 270 mark. So it's taken off a bit of the shine in the last month. That's for sure.
Canola futures were also down about $7 Australian a ton overnight. What correlation is there between that and the information in the WASDE report?
So canola, the ice canola markets, or the Winnipeg canola futures, as they were previously known as, quite often they'll take a strong price direction from Chicago soybean markets, which in this instance also moved lower following the release of the WASDE report and other things that happened. So the story around soybeans has been for quite a while that, you know, because the China have stopped buying U.S. soybeans, you know, for the trade war reasons, U.S. and world soybean end stocks are up quite a bit year on year. But this report trimmed back those numbers quite a bit. And although Chicago soybean markets were initially quite excited by this, the soybean markets moved backwards on the back of spillover pressure from wheat and corn, and also speculation that this week's negotiations between China and the US may not have gotten off to a great start.
What about Black Sea and European crop production? What new information about those regions is revealed in this WASDE report?
So month on month, the Russian wheat production estimate was pretty steady. But what it did say, as I alluded to before, is that the grain coming from those countries, what they call the FSR 12 countries, Russia, Ukraine, and to a lesser extent places like Romania, as they've really ramped up production in recent years, there's been what you could almost call a large structural change in world wheat markets, in that that supply is coming on in plentiful amounts and at a lower price than places like the US and Australia are able or willing to export for.
And I was looking at the ProFarmer Decile report this week, which compares the current season grain prices to historical deciles. And even for WA prices, they're very high. Wheat and barley sitting at between a decile 8 and 9. How do you explain that?
So part of that will be that there's still a bit of a carryover or a lag from last season, when we saw very strong domestic demand from the East Coast coupled with a production shortfall there, drag a lot of grain around from WA to places like Brisbane and Geelong. And at the same time, there's, with harvest just starting in the Geraldton region, although there's been some forward selling or whatever, there probably hasn't been a sufficient time for the market to really find its groove of where it might want to sort of sit for the next 12 months or so.
And what are the chances that these wheat and barley prices will come back a bit, given the better crop in Victoria this year, and also, as you've just been talking about, the large global wheat crop?
Yeah, so on the face of it, you've got to think that there's a bit of potential for prices across the board to come back, particularly in WA, which is going to need to probably play the export competitive game this year. Although, Australian grain is not going to be in the business of, trying to undercut, Russia and Ukraine in markets like Egypt. There still is a very competitive market out there, and price is often king in a lot of instances.
Angus, good to have you on the WA Country Hour. Thank you.
No worries. Thanks very much for having me, Belinda.
Angus Thornton, he's from ProFarmer, and just going through those key figures in the WASDE report, which was released overnight. That's the USDA World Agricultural Supply and Demand Estimates. 13 past 12.
The WA Country Hour with Belinda Varaschetti on ABC Radio WA.
You remember a few weeks ago we were spending a bit of time talking about a particularly severe frost that really caused some damage in WA's Esperance growing region. Well, it wasn't the only growing region to get touched up by frost this season. Some farmers in the Wellstead area, that's between sort of Albany and Esperance, have started swathing their canola, and they're starting to realise just how much damage an early September frost did to their crops. Robert Davey thinks he's facing canola losses in the 80 to 90% range, and says he's never seen a frost like it.
I didn't think we ever got frost because I didn't get out of bed early enough, but obviously we didn't see a lot of damage for the first couple of days, but we were pretty mindful that there was going to be some problems, and they did rear their ugly head sort of over the course of a week. We had quite a bit of stem frost in some of our wheat, and we'd put a majority of our crop was in fairly early, and we had some canola very badly affected, which, just looking at it now, we're swathing some of it, and I would say 90% of it's pretty well knackered. It's not particularly good. There's not a lot of seed in there. And where I am at the moment, I'm looking at the ocean on our farm that's closest to the ocean, and there's always a bit of a theory that we didn't get frost so close to the ocean, but that's gone out the window this year, and we've had quite a bit of frost-affected crops down on the coast as well. Not as severe, so that's a general roundup.
Have you seen anything similar in your time?
No, never. And I guess, we're probably cropping a lot more now to what we used to years ago. We're going a lot earlier as well with longer season varieties. But No, look, I haven't seen, and I, you know, a few of the older people haven't seen, but seen it either. But I guess my son was he was out footy training something at 9 o'clock that night. It was 0 degrees from nine, so I think it was an extended period of about 10 hours of below zero. So, you know, people were saying their bird baths were fairly frozen in the Wellstead town site, so it was obviously very cold.
And Rob, I mean, before that frost event, how was your season shaping up?
Yeah, we were pretty pleased with it. One particular block was a bit dry, struggled all year, but it was just, you know, it was mainly wheat and canola and was looking really good. But the crops were, look, we were very, very happy with them considering the amount of rain we'd had. And I think the general thing around the district was everyone was, you know, really happy with their crops. Mm. You know, it's going to be a really mixed bag from what I can see. We'll wait and see until we put the headers in.
I'd imagine it'd be a bit of a blow to be heading for a what sounds to be a pretty good season considering, and then getting struck down by something that seems to be so unusual for that area.
Yeah, no, look, it was, and I guess we had a pretty difficult time along the south coast, you know, all the way along the south coast, sort of missed out on some decent rains in 2018. We were sort of looking, it looked like we might have been going to catch up a bit. But look, in saying that, the prices appear to be pretty good at the moment. So that's a positive. And I guess we're just not going to, you know, it was looking as though we could have really made some ground up, but it's not going to quite happen. You know, there's still a bit of grain around.
Wellstead farmer Robert Davey talking to John Daly about that bad frost in early September. 17 past 12. Well, not too far from Wellstead in the South Stirlings area, some grain growers are on track for an average to above average season. Earlier this week, Derek Kerwin started swathing his canola and he says things are looking pretty good despite some patches of frost.
We're probably more fortunate than a lot of growers this year. We're going to have a reasonable harvest. We have suffered a little frost, but nowhere near as bad as our neighbours to the east out along the south coast. As far as we can tell, our really early sown crops in March missed out on the frost, but some of the later barley crops that are in a lot lower profile in the environment certainly took a hit. But we're lucky because we don't think it's across the board, and, you know, that's yet to be borne out, but we're thinking that we're not too badly off.
Are you still expecting an above-average year? I know the South Coast has been, well, looking better than many other parts of WA in terms of grain potential.
Yes. Look, we'll be average for sure.
South Stirlings grain grower Derek Kerwin, who's just started swathing his canola on Monday. If you're not a farmer and you're thinking, what on earth are you talking about, the swathing? Well, that's when you cut the canola or other crop and put it into windrows. And it's done when, say, 40 to 60% of seed on the main stem has changed colour. And farmers swath because they're trying to optimise the yield and the oil content. 19 past 12. Kyron Brooks is an agronomist in the Jerramungup, Nwangarup area. And he's on the organising committee for an event called Dancing in the Dirt. It's their first pre-harvest ball and it's on this weekend. And the only small problem is some farmers have jumped the gun.
This idea started sort of a while back. Oh, it would have been about a year ago, I think, when we had a bit of a trying year last year in terms of agriculture and there was some tough times around. And we had a committee from the Fitzgerald Biosphere Group get together and we sort of suggested maybe we should just have a bit of a get-together and enjoy each other's company and just sort of get away from work for a while and just relax a bit.
Now, you mentioned last year being really tough. You're an agronomist. How are things looking this year?
It is hit and miss around the area. It's certainly been another trying year. It certainly hasn't been smooth sailing by any stretch. It's certainly been hard work, but there are nice patches of the area, but there are also some patches that have sort of struggled through. We've had a bit of late frost around the area, which has been extremely disappointing for a lot of the growers. And it's also been a bit isolated too. So some guys have been hit reasonably hard and other guys not so much. So, you know, it's a good opportunity, I think, for everyone to sort of get together, you know, after the last couple of years and just let their head down a little bit and forget about what's going on. We're expecting a little bit of rain, hopefully come through this afternoon. And certainly a few of the lake crops are certainly going to benefit from that.
When do you think the first crop will come off?
I have heard there has been a few headers going in the area already, but I would say the majority of it will start to crank up in the next sort of 10 days, 10 to 14 days. I would have thought the early canola will start to come off.
Agronomist Kyron Brooks talking to Tyne Logan about their Dancing in the Dirt pre-harvest ball being held this weekend in Jerramunga. Around about 200 people expected to go along, so that should be quite fun. 21 past 12 here on the Country Hour. Let's head north now from Jerramunga. And as we were talking about earlier in the week, harvest has started in WA's northern agricultural region. It's always the first place to kick off the harvest. And David Tropiano farms north and south of Mullawar. And on Monday, he delivered his first 50 tonnes of canola to the CBH bin. So his harvesting started on Saturday, just after a big wind the day before, which blew away about 20% of the canola that was ready for harvest.
Yeah, we almost got it over the line, but just that last little hurdle was another little problem.
The crop that you did deliver, I heard that it sampled quite well. How did it go?
Yeah, no, done well, and it's been pretty consistent. We're sort of around that 45 to 46 oil, and then, yeah, everything else was within its parameters with the large and small admix.
And given how dry it's been, you had a very dry September and pretty dry August out there. Dave, if my understanding is correct, how's it performing, but given that?
Yeah, it's actually performing pretty well. You know, we're very happy with yields. We're probably on average, by our long-term average. So that's, yeah, we're very, very happy with that. But we're lucky enough to get an early rain through where we are now, and that sort of got up and away early. So that's sort of a big, big advantage.
Once you've done your canola, will you move straight onto your wheat or will you have to wait?
I think it'll be pretty close to going, yeah. If it's not, it'll be only a few days away. So, yeah, all going well. I think we should roll on and we'll just keep going.
And how's that looking?
Up on this where we are now, looks okay. Looks around average, maybe a little bit above. And then where we go back home, that's, yeah, well below average. We're probably, I'm sort of thinking it's probably about 80%, 70% of our long-term average at home.
Mullawar farmer David Tropiano. A bit further north at Benu, Tom Powell says he's about 2 weeks off harvesting and is looking forward to getting this harvest over and done with.
Yeah, just a little bit of green and everything, and I don't know why things are hanging on. There's no moisture there, but they are, yeah.
Tom, how much rain have you had for September?
We've only had 4 mil for September, and that came in two mil of rain events, and only 23 for August, so it's been very dry.
So 23 mils for August, 4 mils for September, that's... you couldn't get much of a tighter finish, could you? How are those crops looking given that dry finish, Tom?
They're going to produce more grain than I thought we could possibly ever do on that sort of a finish. You know, I think wheat will probably do about 1.2, maybe 1.3 tonne. And the lupins and canola are pretty poor. They'll only do about 500 kilos each. But given the finish we've had, I think it's going to be amazing how much grain we do produce.
Tom Powell, farming east of Benu in the northern agricultural region, and the Geraldton port zone is expected to deliver about 1.2 million tonnes of grain this season. They were talking to Joe Prendergast. 24 past 12.
The WA Country Hour with Belinda Varaschetti on ABC Radio WA.
We'll get to the news headlines and a look at the weather, checking on that rain that's, I think it's already started in some parts of WA, I heard earlier today, but we'll see where that is right now and perhaps what's to come over the next 24 hours or so when we cross to the Bureau of Meteorology. Also, the wool market up this week and Tony Alosi going through those details just before 1 o'clock. The state government has resurrected the Soil and Land Conservation Council. One of its main jobs is going to be to drive WA's first state soil health strategy, which will underpin sustainable agricultural production, growth and jobs. Chairman of the council is agricultural consultant Dr. Kevin Goss. Kevin, what was the trigger to breathe new life into this council after 16 years?
The Minister of Agriculture, Lana McTiernan, fairly soon after she was appointed to that job, made it pretty clear that she wanted a fresh look in this area of soil and land conservation, and she appointed a ministerial advisory committee back in 2017 to advise her. And one of the things that's come out of that is to bring this Soil and Land Conservation Council back into life. And I think there are several reasons for that. There are some quite contemporary issues running at the moment, which are on the minister's mind, but I think are also challenging the agricultural and pastoral industries generally.
All right, what specifically are they?
If we take the cropping zone of the state, there's a lot of work being done by farmers which you would call soil amelioration, and that clearly is indicated that they have to do more to sustain their soil resource base to farming. That's applying new technology to constraints, but that raises questions about just what the status of the soil resource is and the extent to which more can be done and how is it trending anyway. So that's one indicator that things need attention. The other challenge facing agriculture is that there's rising expectations about sustainability of supply chains coming out of farm production. That's through markets and consumers. And there's also rising public expectation that practices will be sustainable. So that'll be something that'll be on our minds as well. And the one that the Minister, Lana McTiernan, has mentioned, and most recently at the Regenerative Agriculture Conference, is this movement within farming and growing to look at farming systems under the general heading of regenerative. And what are they? What's the science and research behind them? And that's something else that I think we'll be considering.
What do you think farmers, WA farmers, should make of the reinstatement of this Soil and Land Conservation Council?
I would think farmers at the moment would be neutral about it because it's early days, but there's an expectation, I think, within the farming community and within society more broadly, that the sustainability of land use practices have to be demonstrated and tracked. That's not a criticism. It is the way that agriculture continues to adapt to the challenges it faces and the rising expectations in the quality and integrity of the food and fibre we produce. And so that's a very contemporary thing, and that extends across the sector, but we would have to look at it as well from a land and soil and land conservation viewpoint.
Well, I look forward to tracking your progress. I know it's only day one, and you and the other council members getting together later this month, so it'd be good to catch up with you as you sort of progress along and work out what that first priority is going to be. Really good to talk to you on the Country Hour today.
Oh, thanks for the opportunity, Belinda. It was a pleasure.
Chair of the Soil and Land Conservation Council, Dr. Kevin Goss. 28 past 12. Well, you know the drinking straws that you use for cool drink or gin and tonic, perhaps, could soon literally be made of Australian-grown straw, replacing the need for plastic ones. An Adelaide ag tech startup is making drinking straws from the hollow stalk that's left over after rye grain has been harvested. The global demand for alternatives to plastic straws is just huge, and some Australian farmers hope to replace them with, well, actual straw. Marty McCarthy with this report.
When the fields have been harvested and the grain loaded and trucked away, that's when businesswoman Marion Bigot will be preparing for a unique harvest of her own.
We could make up to 300,000 straws with 1 hectare. That's a lot of straws for 1 hectare, so if we want to replace the 10 million straws used every day in Australia, we would need a couple of hectares, but that's definitely possible.
Marion is the co-founder of Mr. Rye, an Adelaide-based startup with a pretty big goal.
We are aiming to replace plastic straws in Australia.
And why is that?
Well, because a single-use plastic ban is coming up soon next year in South Australia. We're hoping to offer these straws as a suitable alternative for South Australia first, but also for Australia as a second step.
She wants to make 1 million straws this year, made from the hollow stubble of rye. Straws made from the stems of wheat, rice and bamboo are already available in Australia, but they're imported from overseas.
Rye is a byproduct of the local agriculture, which means that we haven't grown rye for the purpose of being straws, but we're using something that is already there, currently not being used, in order to replace a current issue, which is plastic pollution. We're using rye also because it's a very strong plant. And following our studies and meeting with a researcher in plant breeding, we have noticed that rye is much stronger than other plants and very suitable to become straws.
The straws have a shelf life of at least 2 years and can be used in hot, cold, dairy and alcoholic drinks.
They can actually be reusable at home. So that's a very good thing. Like, you can put them in the dishwasher.
Really?
And they would come out as strong as you had them before.
As for how the straws hold up, I've got a cup of water here. It does work. Because it's a little bit narrower than a normal straw, you do have to work a little bit harder to get your drink up. But yeah.
And then I want
and
to show you.
You're right
you...
about the strength. It is.
Yeah, it's strong, right?
Yeah.
Like, it would crack if you put some strains on it,
yes.
Of course. But like, everybody could crack any straws, really.
Yeah.
But if you use it properly as a straw and you don't bite it and you don't like crush it or anything,
yep.
Well, you can reuse it and you can reuse it for quite a long time.
That's Marion Vigo talking about those rye straws that she's going to be trialling this season. You can head to the ABC Rural website just to check out some of those photos of those rye straws if you're keen for that. This is the Country Hour 29 to 1, and Sandra Shimanberg is in the studio. What's making the headlines, Sandra?
Hello, Belle. WA police have arrested a significant number of people from the climate protest group Extinction Rebellion after they shut down major roads in Perth's central business district. The Home Affairs Minister Peter Dutton says there are many in the federal government who hold concerns about China's actions. Mr Dutton says he has a right to call out Beijing's behaviour if it involves interfering in Australia's domestic affairs. Rain has interrupted play on day two of Tasmania's Sheffield Shield cricket opener against Western Australia in Perth. Players were briefly forced into the pavilion before things got back underway a short time ago. The Tigers are currently 1 for 54 in reply to the Warriors' first innings total of 337. And in the AFL, the Fremantle Dockers have named Simon Garlick as the club's new CEO. He replaces Steve Rossich, who was sacked along with coach Ross Lyon in August this year. Belle, I'll be back at 1 with a full bulletin.
Thank you for that, Sandra. It is 28 to 1 here on the Country Hour. In a moment, we're talking about one of the wines that was entered in this year's Geograph Wine Show, and it had some success, but very hard to get some of it. Very limited supply of it, because I always like to write down the names of those things just in case I'm in the bottle shop or passing one of the wineries and think, oh, I heard about that, so I'll pick that up. Not on this occasion. That is definitely not going to happen. Tell you more about that shortly. Also, a wrap of the wool market, Tony Alosi along just before the news at 1. Right now, let's get to the Bureau of Meteorology, and Austin Watkins is ready for you this afternoon. Austin, we'll have a look at northern and eastern parts firstly.
Yeah, g'day, Belle. Yes, the hot temperatures still continuing through the north of the state, so that includes the Kimberley, the interior and the Pilbara. So elevated fire dangers are continuing through particularly the interior and the southern Kimberley for sort of the next 4 days. A little bit of reprieve from the heat in the West Pilbara early next week with a little bit of cooler air coming up through there, but otherwise no rainfall for the north. But in the east, we'll see middle levels disturbance move into the southern Gascoyne, the Goldfields and the Eucla. So we expect rain through the southwest of the Goldfields and elsewhere through those districts. We'll see some showers and thunderstorms develop during the morning and essentially move eastwards through those regions during the afternoon. There may be some good rainfall totals through the southwest Goldfields, but with that rain bands, we may see sort of 10 to 15 millimetres in some parts, but otherwise, generally speaking, falls in the order of up to 5 millimetres, particularly if you have a thunderstorm overhead through there. And then by Sunday, that middle-level disturbance will be into the sort of Eucla region and may just influence the far east of the Goldfields and the southern interior, mainly during the morning. And then by Monday and Tuesday, we're going to have a ridge of high pressure through the south, so not expecting any more rainfall through those eastern parts of the state.
Let's move into the Southwest Land Division now, and there's quite a bit of hope around the agricultural parts for some rain to come through. I think, you know, 30, 40 mils would be very nice, but I'm not sure if that's going to be the case or not. But there has been some rain even this morning, hasn't there, Austin?
There has, yeah. So the showers have developed. So we've seen rainfall figures since 9 o'clock this morning. Around a millimetre has been the most around sort of Perth and dwelling up. And up until 9 o'clock this morning, we saw as high as 4 millimetres at Jarrowood and a couple of falls of 3 millimetres near the Margaret River Wychcliffe area. So mainly the falls have been in the lower west and the southwest. But satellite pictures and the radar are certainly showing that the mid-level disturbance is starting to develop, and we expect it to continue intensifying mainly this afternoon and evening. And so there'll be showers by midnight tonight, sort of southwest of a line from Durian Bay down to Bremer Bay, and expecting a sort of a rain band to also form through the Great Southern and the adjacent south coast there. And that rain band will then just slowly trudge sort of eastwards and reach Esperance during tomorrow morning, and then eventually weaken out during the day on Saturday. But underneath that rain band, wouldn't be surprised to see sort of 10 to 15 millimetres scattered falls sort of through there. And if you're lucky, and there was also a thunderstorm sort of ahead of that as well, you may even see up to 20 millimetres for some parts. So, there is a little bit of hope through there. But otherwise, generally speaking, through the Southwest Land Division tomorrow, away from that rain area, you'll still see showers and thunderstorms, mainly sort of inland and along the central west coast there. And as that system moves to the east, we'll start to see all that rainfall activity start to clear away from the west during the day. And by Sunday, pretty much clear through the Southwest Land Division. And then we'll see a ridge of high pressure develop across the south of the state, and just during Sunday morning we'll just see a weak frontal feature just brush the western south coast. So we'll see showers develop sort of southwest of a line from Mandurah to Bremer Bay there. Generally light falls expected with that front. And sort of by Monday, the remnants of that front will be moving through the Bight. So just some onshore flow, we'll see showers once again. So the southwest of a line from Perth down to Esperance there. And by Tuesday, another cold front is expected to brush the south coast. It'll be weak again, so it'll just maintain showers pretty much along the south coast there. Generally light falls once again, and a ridge will build behind that one later on Tuesday. Looking ahead, we're not really seeing a great deal of rainfall in the models. I think we'll see a ridge of high pressure develop, and we'll probably bring some more heat back to the Southwest Land Division mid to late next week.
And the warnings for this afternoon, Austin?
So warnings-wise, we've got fire weather warnings, as I mentioned, through the Kimberley Inland, the West Pilbara Coast, the Ashburton Inland and the South Interior. And we have a strong wind warning for coastal waters in just off of Exmouth and Coral Bay for tomorrow.
Thank you very much for that wrap. It is 22 to 1 and no rainfall over 5 millimetres right across the state for the last 24 hours to 9 o'clock this morning. 22 to 1.
On ABC Radio WA, you're with Belinda Barischetti for the WA Country Hour.
One of the wines entered in this year's Geograph Wine Show was an accidental success. Richard Fennessy is a researcher at the Department of Primary Industries, and for the last 3 years he's been trialling some fairly unusual Mediterranean wine grape varieties. One of his creations ended up winning a gold medal. So maybe more WA winemakers should think about growing those varieties that come from parts of the world with climatic conditions similar to ours. But don't worry about getting your pen ready to write down the name of Richard Fennessy's wine, because to say there's a limited supply is an understatement.
We had really, really high bird pressure that particular season. And as a consequence, we lost about two-thirds of our crop due to the birds, and then with some disease challenges as well. So unfortunately, I ended up with only a couple of partial bunches of these varieties, one being a red variety from the southwest of France called Fer, F-E-R. Very obscure variety, but it's been producing some really top wines. And then another variety, Saparavi. This is a Georgian red variety that produces a really unique wine. So I combined them and they fermented together as whole berries, went through the winemaking process, and ended up with two bottles at the end of the day, which I hesitated to put into the Geograph Wine Show this year just because, you know, there was only two bottles and there was such a small volume that I actually didn't get a chance to taste the wine before I could tend it to the show. So I wasn't too sure on what it would taste like. Yeah, it ended up winning a top gold, which was really surprising. Really happy. And when I told the judges that there was only two bottles of it made, they were shocked.
That reflects the broader aspirations of the project, which is to have a look at these obscure wines that we haven't really seen in the Australian market. And you've been doing that for 3 years. It's now come to an end of the project, which I'm sure is a little bit bittersweet. But were there any standouts, you know, key takeaways?
Yeah, there's definitely a number of varieties that have shown some great opportunities for production in West Australia. There's a German white variety called Scheureber, which has very similar attributes to Riesling, and it makes a beautiful aromatic white wine, but it also is quite versatile. It can make a dry style wine, but also a sweet wine as well. So versatility is a really good thing when we're looking at varieties, so that ticks that box. And another variety which is quite obscure is Harsh Levelu, which is a Hungarian white variety. And the last two shows, that's won a gold and silver, and it performs really well in the vineyard. And yeah, we think there's great opportunity with those two whites in particular. Like I said, Saparavi and Fur have shown really consistent results. Another variety that did very well at last year's Geograph Wine Show was an Italian variety called Lagrain, and that got a really strong gold, and the judges were most impressed with it.
Why is it so important for West Australia's wine industry to be open-minded to these new and obscure varieties?
So when you look at West Australian wine industry, 80% of our production is reliant on five varieties. Most people recognise Chardonnay, Cabernet, Shiraz, Merlot. These traditional French varieties make up the vast majority of our production. And, you know, they make fantastic wines, and we do a fantastic job of making world-class wines of these varieties. But if you really think about it, our climate is much more akin to some of the other Mediterranean regions of Europe, and looking at those regions and seeing what varieties perform well there and seeing what they can do here in West Australia, I think it's very important. We don't want to put all our eggs in one basket, and also considering the change in the market, you know, consumers are really looking for, you know, different offerings, and these new varieties are definitely that. And yeah, we might not see the next Cabernet or the next Chardonnay in this selection of varieties, but there's definitely niche markets that, importantly, will pay a premium for something a little bit different. And with the new generation of wine consumers coming through, they don't want to be drinking the same thing that their parents are drinking. So yeah, hopefully I can sit back and reflect on just those, you know, those two bottles of the first Saparavi blend that stumbled across this year, and maybe there will be a commercial version in coming years.
A special fantasy blend.
Oh, maybe. We'll see.
Well done to him, those two bottles, and picking up that prize at the Geograph Wine Show. Deep-head researcher Richard Fennessy with John Daly. 17-1. Horticultural growers in Western Australia's north could soon be getting some assistance setting up protected cropping systems. A new project, 2-year project worth $500,000, has just been launched. And Rowan Prince is DeepHerd's Assistant Director of Horticulture. And he really hopes this research will help farmers solve some pest, disease and weather problems.
In the south of the country, there are already systems and a lot of protected cropping used to grow many different types of crops. But it's not the same situation in the north, where we don't know the systems that are absolutely suitable for warm environments. We're subject to cyclone events. We're not necessarily sure of the varieties of the different products that are suitable for those new warmer systems. It's not just the heat that we're protecting these from, it's the sun, so you can limit the sunburn. There's the wind, so you can limit the markings on the fruits. And we can't use the same system in the south. We can't just copy and paste. And that's part of one of the limiting factors, is that the information packages around to give the growers confidence to trial the system, because we are talking about, you know, sometimes quite a capital investment. So we're going to look at the Carnarvon region as one place, and then we also recognise that the application in Carnarvon will likely to be able to be moved up through the state, through the Pilbara, the Kimberley, to other warm regions in the north.
Do you have any idea already what crops might have a market for overseas exports out of northern WA?
Well, I think you'll definitely see an increase in your melons and your capsicums and those higher value products. I think what you'll also see is the traditional crops that are grown up north, like the mangoes. You find that through potentially protecting them, you may get a higher value in a premium sector of a market, because you're actually producing a far better produce. If you can produce a premium quality fruit, you can obviously explore different sections of the market. So obviously this all has to be market driven, and there has to be a market for the produce. But yeah, there is the potential to, you know, both extend current crops that are grown in the north, or try new crops which might suit a market, a vacancy in the market. And that's where the change in economics comes, because if you can return a greater value from what you're already producing by protecting it, this technology starts paying for itself.
Rowan Prince, who specialises in horticulture at the Department of Primary Industries, he was speaking to Courtney Fowler about some of the benefits of protected cropping systems, an industry which is one of the fastest growing food producing sectors in the country, with an estimated value of around $1.8 billion per year. And he was talking about that two-year research project, which is an R&D partnership between producers, grower groups and government authorities across WA, the Northern Territory and Queensland. 14 to 1. Well, some kids in Western Australia's Kimberley region are learning a bit about horticulture too. Primary school students at the East Kimberley College are learning how to produce fresh produce using sustainable hydroponics.
Snake beans, pumpkin. Yeah, the pumpkin's gone.
So, Danny, did you taste it?
My name's Danny Carter. I'm an education assistant, and I have been involved in the school garden for 5 years. I kind of had this bold plan of creating, you know, a garden, an edible garden where we can, you know, get kids out, and, you know, it's almost like a living laboratory where kids get to experience, smell, taste, walk around, and getting kids and teaching them where food comes from is really important. You know, you have these conversations where, you know, where food comes from, and a lot of kids can't go past, you know, going to Coles or Tucker Box and getting their food. So I think Kununurra is kind of interesting because we are surrounded by agriculture. It's an agriculture town. So I was very surprised to join the school, you know, join the team 5 years ago, and for there not to be a garden. So I think getting the kids in an early age, from, you know, early childhood up, and just almost normalising, you know, the whole edible food garden thing, and just, you know, and then when they do get to high school, hopefully that can be a little bit more complex with the lessons with horticulture, permaculture and sustainability.
And you've got a brand new element to the garden here, a little bit more sophisticated. Tell us about the hydroponics system you've got set up.
So, yeah, we applied for a grant through Water Corporation a couple of months ago, and with hydroponics we create a system where we put nutrients into the water. We teach the kids about, you know, about volume and just how many litres of water we have to put in, how much nutrients we have to put in. So it's almost a little maths lesson involved there. And then, you know, we've skimmed on pH levels as well, so testing the pH of the water.
Bit of chemistry.
Bit of chemistry. So it's been fantastic. You know, we have been talking with the canteen and the PNC to be able to provide the canteen with lettuce and herbs
wow.
and produce.
So you might even be making enough to be able to actually provide it to the local canteen.
I'm Victor and I'm in year five.
I'm Cornelia and I'm in year five.
I'm Ninetta and I'm in year five.
And what's some of your favourite things to pick?
What do you like to pick?
I like picking tomatoes.
Yeah? Oh, there's heaps of them. They look pretty tasty.
And did we have lots of sunflowers?
Yes.
We had big mob of sunflowers, didn't we?
And we have Egyptian spinach which we can eat.
Egyptian spinach? What does that taste like?
Tastes so nice that it's fresh and, yes, it's really healthy. The lettuce is something and it's healthy, we can eat.
I also pick lemongrass. You can eat it and you can rub it into your hands and then it makes your hands smell nice.
It does smell nice, doesn't it?
Mr. Denny, don't play. Oh, Mr. Denny, pass it here.
What are these ones?
Look at those beans.
They're snake beans.
And if we keep these and they go dry, can we keep the seeds? Oh, look at this
yes.
here. So
yes,
look what can happen.
So you can replant the seeds.
So yeah. Watch this. So if we let them dry out and we open this up, what do we have there?
Seeds.
Yeah. So you can take them home if you like and you can grow seeds at home.
I like two big ones already.
Have you guys tried to grow any of this stuff at home?
Yes. We grew some mangoes and sunflowers and... But we didn't get to any snake beans yet.
But we're trying.
You're doing an excellent job. Your garden looks fabulous. Thank you for having me today.
Keep safe.
Thank you.
Make sure you eat your veggies and...
Be healthy.
...other stuff and that keeps you healthy.
He's got the message, hasn't he? Victor, grade 5 student at East Kimberley College. Just one of the volunteers taking Courtney Fowler around for a look at the school garden. And that project funded by the Water Corporation's Kimberley Community Grant Scheme. If you want to have a look at some photos of the fabulous produce being grown at the school, just jump on the ABC Kimberley Facebook page, 10 to 1.
You're with Belinda Barischetti for the WA Country Hour on ABC Radio WA.
A new study tracking the seafood industry's financial contribution has revealed it's worth more than $5 billion. To the Australian economy. It's the first time a national project has built such a detailed picture of the fisheries spend across all the states and territories. Julian Morrison is the project researcher.
Well, I guess the aggregate figures do demonstrate that the fishery does make a terrific contribution. I think directly, just in the production and processing, it's around about $2 billion. Per annum across all of the states. But when you look at the indirect contribution, there's another $3.3 billion. So in total, about $5.3 billion in what we call gross value added. So similar to gross domestic product, a $5.3 billion contribution to the economy, which is very significant, and particularly in regional communities across the country.
And that must have flow-on effects to full-time jobs in processing and value-adding right across that supply chain. How do jobs fit into this study?
Okay, so yes, so we looked at jobs and household income as well. Across the fishing, aquaculture and processing sectors, there's over 15,500 jobs that is directly in those sectors, and then another 26,000 jobs indirectly. So these are the input supply businesses and the businesses that supply those businesses. So there's a lot of business-to-business economic activity generated, but also because there's so many people employed directly in the industry, there's a significant expenditure of income that is earned by people who have household consumption, and that is just as significant as the business-to-business activity that's generated. And in total, there's over 41,000 jobs directly and indirectly.
Out of the states and territories that you surveyed, which had the highest contribution to the economy?
The largest is Tasmania. Some people may think that's surprising, but there is not only a significant wild catch fishing sector in Tasmania, but there's also, as many people would be aware, a significant aquaculture industry, and particularly the salmon industry. So the industry itself generates a lot of economic activity and therefore employment, and then there are strong linkages to the rest of the economy, the Tasmanian economy, and to the mainland economy as well. That there are strong linkages between, as would be no surprise, between Tasmania and particularly to Melbourne or to Victoria, but through the rest of the country.
And the close second?
Is Western Australia, and partly because of the very large and important rock lobster industry in that state, but there are also a number of other wild catch fisheries and some aquaculture activity in the west.
Who's going to end up using this information? What does it mean for the future management of these fisheries in years to come?
Well, I think that it will be an important information for the people who are involved directly in industry. But it's also important for looking at opportunities for growth and for development into the future. To know where you are at the moment and to have an idea gives you a starting point then to build and to have some targets for future growth and future contribution. Because while the industry itself is important, it is dependent upon a lot of other support industries, and it's dependent upon the regulation that is provided through the fisheries departments across the country. And having that understanding of the economic importance of the industry is very helpful in that future planning, development of plans and strategies for the growth of the industry.
Project researcher Dr. Julian Morrison with Larissa Smith just talking about that national study looking at the contribution fisheries and aquaculture have made to the Australian economy. 5-1. We'll get to the wool market in a few minutes. First, though, the original homestead of the father of Australian landscape painter John Glover has been restored to its former glory. Margot Kelly visited the Working Sheep property in Tasmania where art meets agriculture.
The piece that we're most interested in is the old homestead. And this was where John Glover lived, and it was, well, the front wall had fallen down, for starters, before they got there.
Not a good look.
Sort of been almost pasted back together with Yoo-hoo glue to make the houses stand up. The walls were tilting in various ways, and it was what you would call derelict with a lot of sort of that, like it had been pasted together in the 80s with some horrible lino. And actually, Carol Westmore says when they pulled up the lining, it was almost about to fall again.
Every single room in the house was lined out with either asbestos or some sort of cheap lining board. So we knew there was going to be damage underneath that. But until we started pulling that off, we didn't really know the extent of the damage. But of course, once all those lining boards came off, yes, there were chimney breasts that were just held up by a wish and a prayer. The stones was all falling down. It was no longer habitable and there was no turning back.
Now, what's it look like now?
Now it is such a warm, inviting home. And it's quite surprising because when you look at it now, you think, yes, what a lovely country house. And it looks like it was painted in John Glover's artworks. There are hints that it was a challenging restoration. There are no straight lines in the house.
And this weekend on Landline, you can see that restored homestead where landscape painter John Glover lived. So that's Landline this Sunday on ABC TV from 12:30 on iView. 1:03. Let's get to the wool market now. And it was up this week. The Eastern Market Indicator up 32 cents to close at 1,543 cents a kilogram clean. And the Western Market Indicator up 43 cents to close at 1,653 cents a kilogram clean. Tony Alosi, can you go through the market details for us?
Yeah, sure, Belinda. Yeah, it was good news having a bit of a win this week after a terrible week last week. This week nationally we had just over 28,000 bales and in Fremantle just over 6,200. Between the 2 days, Belinda, there was 46% withdrawn and 24% passed in. And the principal buyers were the usual three, Tech Wools, Morris and Swan Wool Processors. Getting on to individual microns and how they performed, 18 micron at 1820 plus 80, 19 microns at 1780 plus 75, 20 microns at 1745 plus 55, 21 microns finished up at 1735 plus 45, and the 22 micron finished at 1710 plus 40. Peas and bellies were generally about 70, 75 cents dearer. Lambs unchanged. Locks were minus 60, with the seedy locks most affected, and crutchings were fully firm.
And just recap the buyers for us again, Tony.
Yeah, Morris, PJ Morris, Tech Wools and Swan Wool Processors.
All right, and what's the mood like in the market at the moment, Tony?
Same buyers every day, Belinda.
Yeah, what's the mood like in the market at the moment, Tony?
Oh, very jittery, you know. There's a lot of nervous mills in China and the buyers there, honestly, talking to a lot of principal buyers from day to day, don't know what's going on. So I was talked to one by today. He seemed to think that it'll probably hover around these levels next week, but he wasn't 100% sure. So,
and that's just the result of the trade tensions that we've been looking at.
Yeah, that's basically what it is. Until they sort that out, I don't think we're going to have any peace, unfortunately.
All right, let's have a look at next week then. What's on offer?
Next week, for week 16, nationally about 40,000, 7,800 in Fremantle, and the 2 weeks after that, 34,000 and 38,000.
Thank you very much for going through those details, Tony Alosi with a wrap of the wool market. Couple of texts just to get in quickly. We were talking about the season for the grain growing, popping into a few places. One was mentioning Nowangerup. This from Mick. Trying time at Nowangerup? Ha! It's hilarious. What a flogger, says Mick. Thank you for that insight, Mick. Appreciate that. Good way to wrap up the show on a Friday afternoon. Time for the news, 1 o'clock.
You've been listening to an ABC podcast. Discover more great ABC podcasts, live radio, and exclusives on the ABC Listen app.